we are thrilled to have you all here this morning. Let's begin with a few readings. The first one comes from the book of Ephesians. It's going to seem like a little strange reading to a degree. Just know I'm going to come back to it briefly as I get into my sermon. It comes from Ephesians chapter 4, verse 7 through 9. And this is from the New Revised Standard Version. Hear now these words. But each of us was given grace according to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore, it is said, quote, when he ascended on high, he made captivity itself a captive. He gave gifts to his people, end quote. And then there's a parenthetical comment that says, when it says he ascended, what does it mean but that he also descended into the lower parts of the earth? Maybe add blessing and understanding to the reading of those words, and we'll come back to them. Also, I want to share with you a quote from John Shelby Spong from an interview he did in 2006, one of my all-time favorite theologians. He had this to say. They were talking about hell, and this was one of his comments about it. He said, I don't think that hell exists. I happen to believe in life after death, but I don't think it's anything to do with reward and punishment. Religion is always in the control business, and that's something people really don't understand. It's in the guilt-producing control business, and if you have heaven as a place where you're rewarded for your goodness, and hell as a place where you're punished for your evil, then you have sort of a control of the population. And so they create this fiery place, which has quite literally scared the hell out of a lot of people throughout Christian history. And it's part of a control tactic.
So this is by Billie Eilish.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. this song was apparently really popular in 2019. When you want to, I look at Gen Z, and her comments on Lucifer. Peter is at the pearly gates in this song. So, if you get Billie Eilish's point of view on all of this and what might be popular current thoughts on Lucifer and hell and heaven and all that. My Lucifer is lonely. Standing there, killing time, can't commit to anything but a crime. Peter's on vacation, an open invitation. Animals, evidence, pearly gates look more like a picket fence once you get inside. Got friends, but can't invite them. Hills burn in California, my turn to ignore ya. Don't say I didn't warn ya. All the good girls go to hell, cause even God herself has enemies. And once the waters start to rise, and heaven's out of sight, she'll want the devil on her team. My Lucifer is lonely. You meeting me, I'm not your friend without some greenery. Walking wearing fetters, teacher should know better. Your color up is caving in, man is such a fool. Why are we saving him? Poisoning themselves now, begging for our help. Wow, Hillsburg in California, my turn to ignore ya. Don't say I didn't warn ya. All the good girls go to hell. Cause even God herself had enemies. And once the waters start to rise and heaven's out of sight, she'll want the devil on her team. My Lucifer is lonely. There's nothing left to save now. My God is gonna
very few places you get to go hear Billie Eilish on Sunday morning. I'm pretty happy about that. I'm a big fan of hers. So fantastic. My message this morning is entitled, The Hell You Say? Recently, one of you asked me about my thoughts on the Apostles' Creed, and what might seem like a not-so-related thought. I've also been getting a lot of correspondence recently about my thoughts on hell. Being that one of my issues with the Creed is what it has to say about hell, and the recent uptick in people interested in it, as well as the fact that we have several new folks here who haven't heard my thoughts on it, I thought today might be a good day to revisit my thoughts about it. As many, if not most of you know, one of the church's most ancient creeds is the Apostles' Creed. It speaks of Jesus descending into hell. And in many Protestant churches, repeating that confession and that line is sort of a staple on Sunday mornings. And most of you likely know the whole thing. I believe God the Father created heaven and earth, so on and so on. I heard the drone starting. Everybody knows. We've all heard it. We've all drone through it. Interestingly enough, that phrase, he descended into hell, wasn't actually added to that creed until decades after the creed was first created. And there is no verse, none, in the Bible that directly says it, but scholars believe that the verse I read a little earlier, that one I told you we'd come back to, that's what a lot of scholars will point to as the foundation for believing that Jesus descended into hell. Here's the thing, though. If you were listening closely, the verse itself is nothing more than I'll let you know, it's nothing more than a poorly structured conjecture about a verse from Psalms. And that verse from Psalms was only about the Ark of the Covenant, the symbol representing God, not Jesus. And it was about it being carried victoriously up to the top of Mount Zion with absolutely no reference to hell or of a Savior to come. Honestly, the whole thing seems a bit preposterous. My mouth doesn't want to say that word today. And that's because it really is. Like I said, the whole thing is based on an inference or a conjecture by Paul in his letter to the Ephesians about verses from Psalms, and frankly, it's not even a particularly reasonable supposition that he makes. The verse that he quotes from Psalms, a verse that is actually about God, not some coming Messiah, mind you, the verse he quotes begins with the phrase, when he ascended on high. And it is at that point that Paul infers that if Jesus, which again, he's referring to a verse that's about God, not Jesus. He infers that if Jesus ascended, he must have first descended. Which, having had more than my fair share of logic classes in undergraduate school, I can tell you, is a staggering, fallacious leap of argument. the really outrageous thing about his backwards logic, which seems to believe that you must first ascend before you can ascend, is that he is using it on a verse that describes an object, the Ark of the Covenant, actually ascending without first descending. Honestly, it's just really sloppy work on the part of Paul. For some folks to then take this sloppy, logic-lacking work and further infer that it's about hell when it only says the lower parts of the earth, which is yet another leap of logic, particularly when you consider that in comparison to the mountain like Zion, valleys and can easily be considered the lower parts of the earth. It doesn't need to be hell. I do believe, however, it invites us to consider the concept of hell. While I disagree with it from a biblical point of view, if you ask most Americans about the afterlife, you'll probably get some version of heaven and hell. If you ask me, it's not only a rather, let's call it odd concept. After all, would an all-loving God condemn someone to an eternity of hell for messing up in their life for 70 or 80 years? Doesn't make sense. I don't buy it. It's not only an odd concept, but the earliest Christians didn't believe in heaven and hell as a place in the afterlife. They just didn't. Along with what I described earlier, it's part of why I have a problem with reciting the Apostles' Creed, and I have problems with it in multiple ways, but that's one of the big ones. In speaking of Jesus, the Creed says that after his death, he descended into heaven. Now, most folks who use this as a confession, as a statement of their beliefs, understand it to mean that during the 3 days between his death on the cross and his resurrection, Jesus took a little road trip to hell. A place of fire and brimstone where sinners are doomed to an eternity of suffering and torment. And frankly, I just don't buy it. You've just heard my primary issue with it. It's not just that it's not biblical, and not only that, it takes some pretty sloppy work of logic to even get to it being even slightly biblical, but there is another reason. I mean, after all, would God damn the people that Jesus spent the most time with to eternal punishment? Like I said, I just don't buy it. Another issue that I have with the confession that Jesus descended into hell has to do with the language used in the Bible to talk about hell. Both of the words that are primarily used and the concept of that day and age without the afterlife, about the afterlife, they have nothing, I mean absolutely nothing to do with our modern construct of hell, which technically really borrows primarily from Dante's seventh circle. Now, on a side note, I've mentioned this before, for those of you who believe everything that I'm saying right now makes me a heretic, that should actually be good news if you think I'm a heretic, because Dante has reserved a special circle for us heretics. So you should be pretty pleased about that. So the word used in trying to support the teachings that he descended into hell is actually the Greek word Hades. And it just doesn't mean, it doesn't mean hell the way that we think of it. It really actually couldn't have. In Greek, Hades is a place of all dead. All the dead. It's not a place of damnation. It's just where you go when you're dead. It's the equivalent of the Hebrew word Sheol, the abode of the dead. It's part of why I don't believe in the modern construct of hell. You see, the Bible does not talk about hell ever, period. It's just a misinterpretation. It doesn't use that word or the connotations behind it. So don't say, well, Jesus said this about that. I know that some Bibles have the word hell in them. But Jesus didn't have the word hell in him, and neither did the ancient writings that now make up the Bible, because the word wasn't around. As a matter of fact, that word didn't even come into being until 700 plus years after Jesus. Jesus talks about Gehenna and Hades, as in that the Greek god of the underworld. And the New Testament also mentions Tartarus, but it only does that once in 2 Timothy. Now, the Old Testament, the Jewish texts, talk only of Sheol, the place of the dead. While they all do have incredibly loose similarities to hell, as we've come to think of it, thanks or no thanks to Dante, they are not the same as what we talk about when we say hell. Just for fun, because I know how much y'all enjoy me diving into these Greek and Hebrew words, here's a quick little background on the words I've been talking about. Hades, as I said, is like Sheol. They're both places of the dead, all the dead, the good and the bad, and there's no fire and brimstone or anything like that there. Gehenna, which Jesus referred to a few times, is actually the name of the burning trash heap outside of Jerusalem. And lastly, Tartarus is the place that fallen angels go. Now, I like y'all, but you're no angel, at least not in the way that they're talking about. I'm not either. So I don't think that that has anything to do with us either. Again, none of them are the same as our modern concept of hell. Getting back to the Apostles' Creed. Once the wording, he descended into hell, finally made it into the Apostles' Creed, like I said, it wasn't in the original. The word that they used when they first put it in there was Hades. They used the Greek word Hades. Again, simply a place where all the dead people went. Now, the point that they were trying to make was not that Jesus went to Dante's hell. The only point that they were trying to make, whether we agree with it or not, is that Jesus was really and truly dead. So much so that he went to the place that dead people go to, Hades. See, he's dead. And on the third day, he arose again from the dead. That's the point. He was dead as he gets, and then after 3 days, he wasn't dead anymore. I don't believe in hell. And any confession that requires me to believe that Dante's hell is not only real, but that Jesus went there, even though the Bible not only says very little about it, but couldn't have actually said anything about Dante's hell, now that's just not a confession that I care to confess. There are those who will say, well, you can understand hell and the creed to mean whatever you want it to mean, but just like the place of the dead, if that's what you want. And for the most part, I agree. But the problem is there's a lot of folks who go and repeat that, who don't think that, and don't even know that it's an option, because they understand it fully as Dante's hell, a place of suffering and damnation. For them, if you don't understand hell to mean a place of eternal damnation and torment, you can't be Christian. If you want to confess it, I say, good for you. Great. If it connects you with those who have confessed these things before you, and if that nurtures your faith, fantastic. I just don't think it's a good enough reason to require me to confess it if I want you to consider me a Christian. Because in the end, Christianity should be big enough for a lot of varying perspectives on this. And even if Christianity can't always be that, big enough for a lot of varied perspectives, I can promise you, this thing that we call God certainly can. So for me, hell? Well, no.
I told you before that Derek Webb is my favorite Christian artist. The truth is, for many years, a lot of the songs that he wrote was an indictment against the evangelical Christian church. So this is one of the songs that he wrote from that period, for sure.
In the dirt, in the glory or for ruin now. You just can't help but let me inside out. You hate in me what you fear in you. The truest lie is an awful truth. So I'm the bait you can't resist, and you confess with every bit. From tiny seed and deepest ground, the secret bait will be found out. The quiet part will be said out loud. A golden door with thorny crown, for ruin or glory now. We just can't help but let the inside out. Oh, there's a clear conclusion. The more I see your tale of the fruits your faith's producing, I do not fear your God's help. From tiny seed and deepest ground, the secret thing will be found out. The quiet part will be set out loud. A golden orb with orange crown, for glory or for ruin now. You just can't help but let me inside out. You just can't help but let me inside out. I do not fear your God's help. I do
today I might share a prayer from my book of prayers. This is number 2 on shedding thin theology. Bow our heads together. It is so easy to fall into thin theology, to think and believe thoughts about the divine, mostly because they make us feel good, make us feel blessed. When a parking spot opens at the front of a store, just as we're pulling up too frequently, we think, I must be living right. When our team wins a sporting event, we thank God for helping us win. It's all too easy to see the divine and the good things in life, but it's all too simple as well. We forget to think about what that tells us about the difficult things in life. Is the inverse true? When there's no parking spot to be found, are we living life wrong? When our team can't pull off a win, is it a curse from God? When life is difficult and tragic, is it really an absence of the divine? May we shed the shallow theologies of this world and jump into the deep seas of the reality of the divine. May we see the divine with us, in us, around us, not just in the good times, but in the tragedy and loss, in the pain and suffering, and maybe more so in those. Not that the divine brings them on, but that the divine lovingly gathers with us in them. May we learn to reflect that love by doing the same for others, sharing love and our presence in the hard times of life. Amen. receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing that we are one. And may you have love and happiness throughout your life. And may your actions and your words share that love and happiness with all of those you meet.